Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and our transportation reporter, Kate Hines, is here now with the latest on the New Jersey train crash in Hoboken yesterday that killed one person and injured 110. Hi, Kate.
Hi, Brian.
First, how'd the crash affect the commute this morning, and how are things now as far as you know?
It sounded somewhat chaotic depending on where you were at any given time in the morning. Stephen Nesson was on the scene, WNYC reporter, and said that in Hoboken, there was a certain amount of chaos. You know, commuters were being directed to Liberty State Park, and then when they got to Liberty State Park, they were told, no, you have to go back into Hoboken and get on shuttle buses. But as the morning went on, you know, more New Jersey transit staff were on scene and able to direct passengers. Sea Caucus saw what sounded to be like more commuters than normal, but it seemed like people, you know, understood where to go and what they were supposed to be doing.
So are there trains that are usually bound for that Hoboken terminal that can be rerouted and wind up in Sea Caucus, and then people can switch and go to Penn Station?
Yes, that is exactly what's happening.
And what's the longer-term outlook for the terminal and the lines that run there?
You know, I don't know. I think it's going to be a little while before we know the status of the track, and the NTSB is in charge of the investigation now. So that means New Jersey Transit does not have control of the track. And as we heard this morning, the NTSB isn't even able to get into the Hoboken terminal yet because the scene is just not safe. You know, I have a couple of questions into New Jersey Transit about this. Like, let's hypothesize that you get a section of the track. Will you be able to run some trains into Hoboken, but not others? And we just don't know yet.
What's the longer term or medium term temporary fix going to be? Same as today's patches with ferries and buses and more use of Sea Caucus?
Yeah, I think that's a safe bet.
And it's reported that the train driver who was injured is out of the hospital and cooperating with investigators. Do you know who he is?
His name is Thomas Gallagher. He's 48 years old. He has worked at New Jersey Transit for about 29 years, and a union roster shows he started as an engineer about 18 years ago. So we know who he is, but, you know, he's not speaking to the media, and the NTSB hopes to interview him later on today.
And listeners, anything you want to say or ask our transportation reporter, Kate Hines, about the Hoboken train crash and its implications, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Kate, everyone seems so reluctant to say what happened or what might have happened. I feel like with the Metro North crash in Spuyten and Duyvil a few years ago, they said pretty much right away what happened.
That crash happened on a Sunday, and I remember coming into the station to cover it. That was quite a horrific event. But they did not say until the next day, I went back and checked, that the train was going 82 miles an hour in a curve with a 30-mile-per-hour speed limit. We do know that the NTSB has pulled the event data recorder from this train, so it is likely that we might hear today that the train was going, you know, X miles per hour. We know that stretch of track into the station had a 10-mile-per-hour speed limit. So we might know some data about brakes and speed today.
Here's a clip of Governor Christie at a news conference yesterday.
Most important thing is the structural safety of that building and the safety of the people that were there. Remember, the one fatality we did have was not someone on the train, but someone who was killed by debris that was created while they were standing on the platform from the crash. And so we need to make sure that the entire portion of that building is safe from a power perspective and a structural perspective so that we don't have any unintended injuries going forward. So that'll be our first priority. When we determine that it's safe, we'll reopen the building, but we won't reopen it a minute earlier.
From a structural perspective and from a power perspective, they'll need to determine that it's safe.
Right. Contractors, I believe, are on scene right now trying to remove the pieces of the fallen roof, which is resting on top of the first car of the train. And there was a concern that there may be asbestos involved because the building was built in 1907. So they don't know for sure that asbestos is there. We do know that it was used in buildings of that time. So they have to guard against that as well.
It is one of the oldest train terminals in the country. It has
beautiful
people. Yeah. There's
really
also
beautiful.
A kind of historic building issue here. And I haven't seen a lot of video of the scene. And this is, of course, something that pales compared to the loss of the individual's life and all the people who are injured. But has that historic building been badly damaged?
Well, certainly the place where the trains come in have been badly damaged, but from what I understand, the train did not cut through the waiting room, which is the real historic part of the station with the Tiffany glass and the old clock. So the waiting room appears to be intact, but I'm sure that other, you know, pieces of the historical structure have been lost.
And I do want to say the name of and offer our condolences to the family of the person who was killed, 34-year-old Fabiola Bittard de Kroon of Hoboken, originally from Brazil. And it's such a heartbreaking story. She had just dropped off her toddler at preschool and had gone into the station.
It is kind of, it's heart-wrenching to think that there's an 18-month-old child that lost its mother as a result of this.
Anything else on the extent of the injuries that's coming out? I gather there were a few injuries that were considered very serious, but I don't know that they're updating us on the individuals.
Yeah, I don't know much more than, you know, over 100 people were injured. Governor Christie did say yesterday that none of the injuries, as far as he knew, were expected to result in any further deaths. So there is that.
And Governor Christie and Governor Cuomo were out on various media yesterday saying that, you know, not to minimize the tragedy of this woman who died or other people who were injured, considering the speed at which that train with a lot of people on it and a lot of people in the station crashed into the end of the rail, it could have been so much worse.
Yeah, that was the impression I got from Nancy Solomon, who's an editor here at WNYC, who actually was in the station yesterday at the time of the crash, and she said she could not believe that there were not more deaths and more serious injuries. That when you looked at the scene as it was laid out in front of you, it was amazing how few that there was only one death.
And I see that PATH service has already been restored?
Yep, they restored it yesterday in time for the evening rush hour. So that's up and running, and I imagine a lot of commuters are defecting over to the PATH trains right now.
I guess so. And that's still from that same complex?
Yeah, it's underneath. You know, the trains, the New Jersey Transit trains are obviously at ground level, and the PATH train goes underneath the terminal at that point, and, you know, so it can make its traverse across the Hudson River. But yes, that was deemed structurally safe, and those trains are operational.
George in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, George.
Yeah, hi. I just, with all the news coverage, I haven't heard anything about whether or not a blood test was given to the engineer to see if there was any, you know, alcohol or drugs involved, and whether or not anyone checked his cell phone. Maybe it was a case of distracted driving, you know, that kind of thing.
Hi, George. That will be part of the NTSB investigation. They routinely do toxicology screening and pull the cell phone records of all of the train crew members, not just the engineer. So we should know more about that.
But it just hasn't been released yet, George. I'm sure we will know more about that. Martin in Bergen County, you're on WNYC. Hi, Martin.
Hi, yes. I'd like to know if the funds that were diverted from PATH revenues and spent improperly on the Pulaski Skyway would have been sufficient to have installed the automatic speed control devices that would have stopped this train and others in accidents over the past several years. Had the money been used for that purpose?
Yeah, Martin, what I think you're referring to is when Christie killed the ARC Tunnel project and then diverted the money back to the state's Transportation Trust Fund, which was then insolvent as it is now, and then portioned it out to projects like the Pulaski Skyway. And the very short answer to that is probably yes, although we don't know because New Jersey's transportation funding picture is such a tangle. But right now, the state's Transportation Trust Fund has a moratorium on it because it's out of money and no one can get on the same page about how to raise the gas tax to replenish it. So basically, the agency was supposed to have received about $582 million in its fiscal 2017 budget from the Transportation Trust Fund that it doesn't have right now because of the shutdown. Positive train control is about a $300 million project, but I saw that in the Star Ledger today, Richard Hammer, who's the state's transportation commissioner, has come out swinging in an editorial saying, look, let me be clear that the Transportation Trust Fund standoff has nothing to do with PTC. That's not on the list of projects that have been stopped. We are going full speed ahead on implementing it.
Are you convinced of that as our transportation reporter?
I'm fairly convinced that New Jersey Transit's finances are very precarious. I don't know They certainly have not made a lot of progress towards implementing PTC. In fact, it seems like they've made almost no progress towards implementing PTC. So it's hard to, you know, it does seem like, yeah, what's happening with the TTF today has nothing to do with PTC, but they didn't make progress before it. So
PTC, positive train control.
Positive train control.
I understand is actually pretty expensive, train by train.
Yeah, it's really expensive. It's, you know, Metro North and Long Island Railroad took out almost $1 billion loan last year in order to implement it on their systems. It's really expensive, and in part because it's not an on-the-shelf technology, off-the-shelf technology. You can't just go into a store and buy it. You have to graft it on your existing communication system. It's an overlay, and then you have to train your staff in it. It's really pricey.
So the MTA trains do already have it?
No. No, they're working on it, and they're slightly farther along than New Jersey Transit. But no one in our area has it fully implemented right now, with the exception of Amtrak, which has a stretch of track running through the area that has it. But nobody has to have it because the federal deadline is not until 2018.
You know what strikes me here as, if not an analogy, something that's relevant to talk about, people who work in work on trains won't even like the conversation. But there's so much talk about driverless cars these days, and that they would make the road statistically more safer, even though it kind of freaks us out to think about giving up that control. If that's true, it must be even more true for trains, where the system is supposed to be completely rational as to what speed you're going on, what stretch of tracks, where the switches are supposed to be controlled in a completely rational way. It's not like, you know, all of us on the New Jersey Turnpike changing lanes and weaving and stuff like that, and different amounts of traffic depending on conditions and rain and everything. I mean, you would think that even a driverless train system, an entirely driverless train system, might actually be safer than relying on human beings.
Well, that's the idea behind PTC, is that it can safeguard against human error, which is, you know, something like 50% of the reason for fatalities in the transit system. We had a little bit of this conversation at our editorial meeting, not 15 minutes before I came into the studio. Huh. And one of the things that we were talking about is, you know, why is this such a big deal in cars? Why do we talk about driverless vehicles so often? And we're not really talking about driverless trains. And one of the things that came up was that 33,000 people a year die in car crashes, and human error in car crashes is the primary driver in car fatalities. And so if you want the most bang for your buck and you want to save people's lives, that's really where the focus is.
Yeah, but I think it's sad but true that a lot more people die in train crashes than die in airplane crashes. And airplane crashes get a lot of attention, and so much money and everything, and, you know, fear of litigation and everything has been put into avoiding plane crashes. I mean, it's incredible how safe it is statistically to fly probably around the world on commercial airlines, certainly in the United States. And it seems like every so often you and I are in here talking about a passenger train crash when we almost never have an airplane crash to talk about.
Yeah, that's certainly true. And one of the most vulnerable areas for railroad crashes, which is also one of the most difficult to fix, are what are called at-grade crossings, where trains meet cars, meet vehicles on the road. And that is a big source of when you go into rail statistics, rail fatality statistics, and you parse the data. A lot of the fatalities have to do with cars being hit by trains because they're crossing train tracks.
Let's take a call from a railroad worker, Mike in Sayville. Mike, thank you so much for calling in. Hi there.
Hey, good morning. What I'd like to say is that when the train's in operation, it's not just the engineer that's on the train running the train. There's also, you know, conductors, crew. And part of their job is to be aware of, like, what's going on, you know, the position of the train, what speed it's coming in. And that's why you have the emergency brakes, you know, those pole handles you see in the movies.
Yep.
They're not really for passengers. They're for the crew. And if, you know, if you're on a train and you see the train coming to the station too fast, you don't just say to yourself, well, it's too fast. You jump up and you pull the handle. You know, it's likely that guy in the cab passed out.
Yeah.
And the conductors and the crew are there to back that guy up. And
I wonder how much time they would have had, because the train presumably is going at one legal speed up to a certain point where it gets just close enough to the station that they're supposed to start slowing down. Do you have any impression, Mike? I'm sure it's different at every train station and terminal, but how gradually that slowdown would normally take place? Or
I've never ridden one of those trains in Jersey in my life.
Yeah.
What I would imagine that it's coming into a fairly congested area, and it's going to slow down from a high speed to a medium speed to a slow speed. That would be my impression. When they pull into stations, they go from pretty high speed, and they don't slow down and then slow down more. But coming to a place like that where it's the end of the line, I would think that it would slow and then slow again. But quite frankly, no matter any time you dump the brakes, it's going to help somewhat. It might not have ended up into the building.
Mike,
it's tough to say, but I think that. The conductors, they have to be maybe a little more aware of what's going on. I mean, when I ride the train, if I'm not asleep, I do look out the window and you ride the train every day. You know where it's supposed to be fast. You know where it's supposed to be slow. You're on the train all the time.
Yeah, and I guess if you work in the industry, then you're really, really aware of it.
Yeah, and the other thing I wanted to say, which I heard while I was on hold, about positive train control.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would be a big help. But you'll never see a single pilot in an aircraft. There's always two. In the trains, there's only one guy, and that's why you're gonna have more accidents in planes. And planes don't have grade crossings and stuff like that. And as far as the engineerless ones, they run that on the air train, at a JFK.
Uh-huh.
But that's just a double track, and each train goes its own way. They can't even possibly hit each other. It's different on the railroad. The rails are congested, and you go over by when you come into Queens, where from Long Island into the Midtown Tunnel, they have what's called the Harold interlocking.
Uh-huh.
That's the most complicated interlocking in the country, and it also involves Amtrak uses it. So there's a lot of coordination that's got to go on, and. The people are pretty good at it. I'm not sure the machines would, if they could ever even work that out. I mean, it'd be like the Jetsons. I don't know.
Mike, thank you very much. I really appreciate you calling in with your knowledge. So a few things there. One, he's arguing that human beings are not obsolete yet, especially for some of the more congested areas where, different trains are going back and forth. I guess there are other people who might call up and say, no, a computer would actually do a better job at that. But that's a conversation we don't have to have today. But I think the other point that he makes is really important, that if the engineer passed out, presumably something mm-hmm. happened to the engineer to make him unaware of what was actually going on as he normally would have been.
Well, we don't know that yet. That we don't know what the condition of the engineer was. And we can't speculate.
Well, that's fair. And the governors yesterday were careful to rule out nothing, which I guess means they're not even ruling out that for whatever reason the driver of the train might have done this intentionally. Though they don't seem to be indicating that there's particular suspicion of that, but they weren't even going to rule that out.
Right. Yeah, that was interesting. Although it seems like the focus of the investigation has nothing whatsoever to do with intentional action on the part of anyone.
Right. And I wonder how many other crew would have been on that train to pull the emergency brake in the way that Mike raises.
Right. We know that there were two other crew members. I'm wondering, I'm kind of fascinated that this took place in a terminal. And I'm wondering how different things would have been if this was if it wasn't a terminal, if it was just a station stop where the train continues going, and the fact that this is something that literally dead ends into a wall made it all the worse, which seems like it did.
I guess if a train, by incapacity of the driver or whatever other reason, wound up, just speeding through an ongoing station that it was supposed to stop at, then people would start to really realize it. and it would be easier to take some action. Maybe this was just, assuming it was an accident, a freak accident, because it was at a terminal.
Right. And there's even, you know, healthy discussion as to whether and how effective PTC would be in a very tight situation like this, in a terminal, because trains are supposed to be decreasing their speed so rapidly as you come into a place like Hoboken Terminal. You know, PTC, even on the Amtrak corridor, is not in effect at some stations because of that reason. You know, it's thought to be most effective on the open stretches where there could be other incursion of other trains and where you have, you know, set speed limits over a period of time.
So when are they going to give their next briefing? Is there a news conference scheduled for today for us to learn more?
They've said that they will brief sometime this afternoon, although they haven't released the time yet.
WNYC transportation reporter Kate Hines. Kate, thanks a lot.
Thank you.